Chapter 18. Caution with Children. How should kids eat? Is LCHF ketogenic eating suitable for children? Does it work? Is it safe? Like all the issues I've been discussing, little research exists to answer these questions definitively. Again, we have to be guided by common sense. A reasonable anxiety about dietary treatments for children with obesity is that the treatment and the obsessive attention to how and what they eat will result in a permanent or near-permanent eating disorder. The conventional definition of an eating disorder includes highly restrictive eating, and abstaining from essentially all of an entire food group certainly falls into that category. Most authorities prefer children and adolescents not abstain from carbohydrates for all the reasons they prefer adults not abstain. It's better to remain overweight or obese with a balanced and conventional dietary approach that doesn't work, mild restriction of all calories equally plus exercise, than to be obsessive with a way of eating that might. Treading carefully is in order. I suggest that children and adolescents who would like to change what they eat to achieve and maintain a healthier weight should do it in a way that is based on human physiology rather than on physics, energy in, energy out, and that has the best chance of achieving their goals. Since James Sidbury Jr.'s work at Duke in 1975, it has been clear that LCHF ketogenic eating works as well for children with obesity as it does for adults. Children can lose weight without hunger and eat to satiety. The academic research literature even includes evidence that LCHF ketogenic eating induces weight loss without hunger in those with such genetic disorders as Prader-Willi syndrome, which is characterized by both extreme fat accumulation and ravenous hunger. "Food is a death sentence for these kids," is how a 2015 headline of a New York Times Magazine article described the problem. As early as 1989, William Dietz, then a nutrition researcher at MIT and later the director of nutrition and physical activity at the Centers for Disease Control, was reporting that a low-calorie ketogenic diet was especially successful on patients with Prader-Willi syndrome who lost significant weight eating it and whose characteristic ravenous appetites appeared to be suppressed. But just as adults have to embrace LCHF ketogenic eating to succeed and maintain it for a lifetime, so very likely will children. For anyone to do that, understanding the rationale is critical. That's a lot to ask of any child, particularly when that reason is controversial and the authorities are arguing that abstinence from carbohydrates does more harm than good. It will also surely help if the parents and the other siblings embrace LCHF ketogenic eating as well. Among the clinicians and other professionals I interviewed, I could only find a handful who specialized in the treatment of children with obesity. Jenny Favre, a registered dietitian, has worked with the Healthy Lifestyles Program at Duke University Medical Center since 2006, when it was founded by Sarah Armstrong, a pediatric obesity specialist. With few exceptions, the Healthy Lifestyles Program admits only children in the top 5% of body mass index, who often have weight-related problems, comorbidities, such as diabetes or fatty liver disease as well. 13 years later, the program had served over 13,000 children and families, over 100,000 patient visits, and its staff had expanded to include several pediatricians, physician assistants, nurse practitioners, physical therapists, dietitians, and a behavioral specialist. For the first 5 years, Favre told me, the program provided families with conventional dietary counseling, structured meals, controlled portions, low-fat foods, no sugar. A few years in, Favre heard Eric Westman speak, and after her initial skepticism, "What's this guy talking about?" she gradually started getting it. She read the available literature and decided the rationale underlying LCHF ketogenic eating made sense. By 2011, Favre and Armstrong and their colleagues had created an LCHF ketogenic diet as a treatment option for the children. As Favre describes it, the eating plan was carefully designed to provide a balance of real foods heavily focused on low-carb, i.e. green leafy vegetables, generous sources of protein, and considerable fat via butter, olive oil, coconut oil, heavy cream, full-fat cheeses, nuts, nut butters, and avocados. Fatty protein sources are recommended, rather than lean. Cold water fish, poultry with the skin attached, tofu, and well-marbled beef. Now, said Fevre, she cringes at the notion that she used to tell families to eat low-fat foods. All the obvious carbohydrate-rich foods are initially eliminated, including milk and fruit juices. To help manage cravings for favorite carb-based foods, and also to minimize dietary boredom, Favre said, families are provided with recipes for making delicious alternatives, such as creamy mashed cauliflower, zucchini noodles, cheesy crust pizza, and even various types of fat bombs, the primary ingredient of which is coconut butter. The ketogenic phase is continued for as long as desired, at which point some slow carbs, such as legumes and whole oats, are gradually reintroduced, as well as whole fruit. The focus of the eating plan continues to be large servings of low-carb vegetables, along with adequate protein and a lot of fat. Favre, Armstrong, and their colleagues also teach mindfulness in eating, eating only in response to actual hunger, and taking the time to eat leisurely, giving the child time to recognize when he or she is actually satisfied. Whether the families choose to do an LCHF ketogenic eating plan or to simply focus on eating what Favre described as a controlled carbohydrate diet of higher fat real foods, all are encouraged to enjoy their food and to eat it mindfully. As Favre explained it to me, many of the families and children in the program see significant weight loss just by eliminating the obvious carb-rich foods and beverages. But those who embrace the full LCHF ketogenic plan find it works better than any of the alternatives. It does so without advising the children and their families that they have to consciously restrict how much they eat and without prescribing calorie levels for them. These kids are just not as hungry, Favre said, which may be something they've never experienced before. We hear they have more energy. We certainly have many kids whose body mass index is decreasing, which is a success. We have many kids whose liver function tests normalize. That's a success. We have kids whose blood lipid abnormalities improve. They don't just lose weight. They get healthier. The Duke experience is not unique. David Ludwig, who directed the Optimal Weight for Life Clinic at Boston Children's Hospital for 20 years, has had similar success. Of all the patients he and his colleagues have seen at his clinic, Ludwig told me, about a third have little or no interest in changing what they eat. Another third, who take seriously their counseling to avoid sugars, grains, and starchy vegetables, would lose some weight, Ludwig said, and then gain a little back. Their risk factors would tend to improve, but it was clearly an ongoing struggle. The last third show really substantial and sustained improvement, and in those, it's really dramatic. When you see these kids a year later, they look like completely different people. With children, as with adults, the key to success seems to be the degree to which they can embrace LCHF ketogenic eating, remain confident in the approach, and learn to pull the right levers when it's not working. As with conventional family-based therapies for children, success is more likely if everyone in the family, other siblings included, eat the same way and the house is free from temptations. The child who has to watch a sibling eat pasta for dinner and sweets for dessert while she is abstaining is a child who is likely to find abstinence verging on impossible. If there's a Coca-Cola in the fridge, as Rob Sivas said to me, a child is going to drink it. Sivas specializes in bariatric surgery for adults and adolescents, and he often works with children who weigh upward of 250 pounds. He believes that for these children, surgery is often necessary to bring their weight under control, but they have to learn to avoid carbohydrates so they can stay lean afterward. When I asked him how he gets his young patients to buy into carbohydrate abstinence, he responded with a question of his own. How do you eat an elephant? When I had no answer, he gave it to me, one piece at a time. He starts with the advice not to drink calories, and particularly sugary drinks, and then moves on to what he calls vehicle foods, the carb-rich foods we use to transfer other foods from plate to mouth. Instead of sushi with rice, he advises, eat sashimi without it. Eat burgers without buns. meatballs, but not spaghetti. The inside of a burrito, not the outside. The next step is to give up candy and snack foods. If he can get his patients that far, he makes it a game. "Let's see how deep into ketosis you can get," he tells them. As they start to see and feel the difference, he says, not surprisingly, it gets easier. The challenge, ultimately, is the society in which we live. One mother who has a daughter with obesity and asked for anonymity told me their challenge is not just the third grade teacher who uses cookies or candy to reward performance, or the juice boxes and social pressure at monthly or biweekly birthday parties, but her daughter's completely understandable desire to be normal in a world in which eating everything, particularly sweets, is indeed the norm. "You even have to choose your words carefully," she told me. "If you say, 'Oh, we do a low-carb diet,' it is suddenly this horrific, forbidden thing. If you say, 'Oh, we eat vegetables and meats and healthy fats,' then the response is, 'Oh, that's wonderful.'" Finally, I want to tell you about a young physician and her daughter, who will both remain anonymous. When I asked this physician, to whom I would like to give the last words in this book, what changed her perspective on how to treat her patients, she told me, "The honest answer is that my daughter has obesity. I have been watching her gain weight year after year and seeing her struggle with that and trying to understand it. I have been developing this empathy because she is my daughter. Until then, I never had the firsthand experience. But seeing it in my child and trying to wrap my head around what was happening made me think more critically about it." Her own family is slender, she said, but obesity runs on her husband's side. Together, they have a son whom she described as a beanpole who can eat anything. Her daughter began gaining 30 pounds a year in fourth grade. "I didn't know what to do about it," she said, "besides saying, 'Don't eat that,' or 'Don't have a second donut at a school party.' Because even though you can control what you cook in the house, even when they're living with you, kids, like everybody, have 3 million opportunities outside the house to eat crap, especially sugary crap." At that point, I brought her to the doctor and had a really bad experience, because the doctors don't know what they're doing either. It's all this eat less, exercise more advice. But nobody wants to say that too much because they're afraid they'll give these young girls an eating disorder too. It's all very gentle and not very effective. Carbohydrate restriction and eating healthy has helped her daughter maintain weight. But they have yet to restrict carbohydrates sufficiently to see if LCHF ketogenic eating would really help her daughter lose some of her excess fat. "She wasn't willing to do that," the physician said of her daughter, "and she wasn't going to push. Meanwhile, she made the effort to understand the physiology and metabolism and perhaps why her daughter was both putting on fat and always hungry. She found a physician who was willing to help with her daughter. Now she herself has changed how she approaches obesity and type 2 diabetes in her patients. 'So much of what I'm doing now is about getting people healthy,' she told me. And LCHF ketogenic eating works with her patients. Getting people to lose weight and not be hungry is the key to having any success. And low-carbohydrate, high-fat is the only one that really does that," she said. "People think it's so complicated, but it's not. Such a big part of what I'm doing is trying to get people to be on board, to understand what we're talking about, to stop blaming themselves, stop starving themselves, to follow up correctly, and to have the experience of success."